hear that? That's the sound of delegates and attendees at the COP28 climate talks in Dubai. It's December 13th, 2023, and these UN-sponsored climate talks have finally concluded with what many are calling a landmark deal. For the first time ever, the COP agreement names the elephant in the room: fossil fuels. It commits countries to developing plans for, quote, transitioning away from fossil fuels in energy systems in this critical decade, and in a just, orderly, and equitable manner. The aim is to bring net greenhouse gas pollution to zero by 2050, quote, in keeping with the science. In the hours after the agreement was released, many countries and non-governmental organizations pointed out the problems and loopholes found in the text. Nevertheless, the agreement finally puts into words what we all have known: fossil fuels need to go, and soon, if not now. I'm Nancy Basilchuk, and you're listening to 63 Degrees North, an original podcast from NTNU, the Norwegian University of Science and Technology. Today, in this podcast extra, I'm going to talk to Anders Hammer Strømmen, a professor at NTNU's Industrial Ecology Program, who has been in Dubai for the climate talks. He's the one who recorded that sound from the talks themselves at the top of the podcast. He's also one of the many scientists whose work the countries of the world have pledged to act in keeping with as they take action to curb greenhouse gas emissions. Anders was a lead author on the transport chapter for the last Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report on mitigation of climate change, which was released in April 2022. The goal of that report was to examine a huge range of options that countries can enact to cut greenhouse gas emissions. The panel, often abbreviated as IPCC, asked Anders to come to Dubai to talk to a two-day meeting with the shipping community about options. So, I talked to Anders while he was in Dubai to see what it was like. Not quite behind the scenes, but watching firsthand as science meets industry. Let's start with one of the big surprises, to me anyway. When policymakers are talking about the greenhouse gas emission cuts that countries pledged to make in the 2015 Paris Agreement, these pledges don't include shipping. Instead, the shipping industry is governed by the International Maritime Organization, the IMO.
So they are still on the side of the standard way of working with how science and policy interfaces in terms of agreeing on how we should reduce our emissions. So, and with that, I mean, they are not a part of the Paris Agreement, right? And it's governed by the International Maritime Organization.
Shipping is a small but significant contributor to greenhouse gas emissions. The IPCC chapter that Anders co-authored points out that maritime transport volume has increased by 250% over the past 40 years, reaching an all-time high of 11 billion tons of transported goods in 2018. The chapter says that maritime shipping contributes to about 2-3% of all greenhouse gas emissions. One of the key issues here is that shipping companies are constantly building new ships to keep up with demand and to replace aging ships. Anders told me for a recent article I wrote that, quote, the big question for many ship owners is what type of fuels and solutions do we choose for the next generation of ships? If the policies aren't in place, they're not going to be investing in the low-carbon solutions we need to get the sector on track towards meeting the goals of the Paris Agreement. Given that challenge, what impressions did he have of the industry after his presentation and meeting with them?
The general sentiment is that there's been a fairly large change in sentiment across the sector, going from a clear hard to bait and how to negotiate, hard to discuss sector, to becoming more of a sector which is actually eager to do their part and needed to find ways forward, and a broad interest in what solutions might be feasible, what they can do. So a lot of, I would say, gone from, it appears, not being overly interested in the matter at hand to becoming quite engaged in finding a path forward. But whether that transforms to broader action remains to be seen. But the general sentiment has indeed shifted.
So that's some good news. Another thing Anders did while in Dubai was to talk to a number of high school classes in Trondheim, a kind of live from Dubai session, where he could update them on what was going on and answer their questions. I asked him why he decided to do that.
First of all, I think that's something we generally should be doing, reaching out to all generations in a sense, because it's an intergenerational matter. It's not something we'll be resolving and it will be done in 10 years. I think their generation has to be prepared for that, and this is going to be a key determining factor in their generation, how we deal with climate change going forward. Because, I mean, we're literally only seeing the tip of the iceberg. And we might only be able to see the tip of the iceberg. That's also the sad thing. But climate change will be even more defining factor in their lives than it has been for ours.
At the point when I interviewed him, he'd had just one big video conference with a number of classes in an auditorium. And because Dubai's time zone is 3 hours later than Norway, it was fairly early in the morning for them.
You said it was mostly the teachers who were asking you questions. Is that correct?
Yeah, but it was 8 o'clock in the morning back in Norway, right? I mean, students, even my university class wouldn't be asking much questions at 8 o'clock in the morning. They would be wondering where the coffee machine is, right?
But you never know what kind of long-term impact this kind of outreach can have. I also wondered if Anders was meeting with other Norwegians while in Dubai, but he told me he was mostly meeting with other IPCC authors like himself. I asked him what they were talking about over coffee.
That it's also going slow in the 28th meeting in a state which has strong traditions in oil and gas is neither a big surprise. Many of my fellow scientists, including myself, is that we're observing how the science and the scientific language, especially that which is used in the summer for policymakers from the IPCC, is being interpreted and used in political processes. Now, we don't have insights into the back rooms, but we see sort of how wording comes into the drafts and how snippets of that is clearly related to the wording in the summary for policymakers from the IPCC. So sort of that knowledge chain is quite interesting to observe for us who are part of generating or sort of synthesizing that information, if you will.
Does it make you think that as a scientist, you have to be more activist in your language so that it finds its way into the policy?
No, I don't think we have to be activists. I think we just need to be more conscious, be more aware of the political context, the language that we are phrasing and being used. So the phrases that goes into those synopses, the summaries for policymakers, clearly are key central objects in discussions on the rhetorics and how the language is in the agreements then.
Not long after the COP28 agreement was released, the Guardian newspaper reported the reaction of Susanna Mohammed, Colombia's environment minister. Her words should be encouraging for scientists like Anders. The text reflects the political reality of this plenary. President Petro defines the struggle of this century between fossil capital and life. The Guardian quoted her as saying, President Petro, I will add, is what she's calling the president of COP28, Sultan Al Jaber, who also happens to be CEO of the Abu Dhabi National Oil Company. Quote, we were able to live an intense discussion that was able to make a step forward, but there are also loopholes which may create difficulties for us in making 1.5 degrees C. It is the first time science has influenced the decision of COP in such a deep way. I invite scientists to continue with their hard work around the world because it is opening doors. After the agreement was released, and while Anders was on his way back from Dubai, he wrote me and said, quote, "The agreement is an important step in the right direction, and NTNU now has an important job in supporting Norwegian society out of the fossil era." So what should listeners know from Anders' experience in Dubai? What is his takeaway?
To limit global warming to 1.5 degrees, global greenhouse gas emissions will have to peak before 2025 at the latest and be reduced by 43% by 2030. And to limit global warming to around 2 degrees, the emissions still will have to peak before 2025 at the latest, but then be reduced by about 27% by 2030. When the IPCC wrapped up its assessment, the country said it would be doing would be taking us towards 2.8 degrees. So that's quite a bit of a gap still.
Nevertheless, no matter any deficiencies in the COP28 language, Anders says it's important to underscore that moving away from fossil fuels is not a hopeless effort, at least not from a technical and scientific standpoint.
We've shown that there are options available across the board that could allow us to halve emissions by 2030 and thereby keep the 1.5 degree target alive. So I think it's for all of us to, as citizens, then and engage. It doesn't have to be that you necessarily need to raise your voice, but using the voice you have in voting, making sure that those that we elect in our democracies and represent us fully understand the challenges and that they will seriously address it. I think that's the most important message.
I'm Nancy Basilchuk, and you've been listening to 63 Degrees North, an original podcast from NTNU, the Norwegian University of Science and Technology. If you want to know more about Anders' work with the IPCC report and other NTNU researchers who have been active with the IPCC and the COP28 talks, check out our show notes. You can also check out other episodes of 63 Degrees North that talk about climate change. Thanks for listening.